This is Age of Treason Radio.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why. For there were many things I didn't know.
On the White Network. With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Media, Identity, and the Boston Bombing. I'm going to add to what I talked about the last time as far as the what came out of the Boston bombing, my observations of it. And I also want to tie in some of the themes that I've talked about in previous installments over the past year about group identity and whiteness. And it turns out that one of the things that was at the center of this Boston bombing was whiteness and race. And for the people, and it seems like the vast majority fall into this category, who want to avoid race and avoid talking about whiteness, it's unavoidable. It will be thrust in our face anyway by the Jews media because they think it's important. And it's one of the many things that I've come to realize over the past few years is, you know, you may not be interested in race, but race is interested in you. So another major thing, a major theme, is the dishonesty of this environment, this regime that rules at the moment. The Jewish nature of it is cryptic and for the most part hidden, although it too is unavoidable when you really face the reality and who it is that's defining the terms of debate and setting the limits on things. And the fact that it's anti-white rhetoric and pro-Jewish, but not openly. And if you say that in those terms, then you know you're excluded from the conversation. You can no longer participate. So about the media, I've never spoken directly about the media, and I'm not going to lecture people. I think most people understand what the media is, what it means, but you know, it's there's a lot of facets to it: books, newspapers, magazines, radio, movies, television, and more recently the internet. But what it is basically, when somebody says the media, they're talking about this communication between people, and to a lesser extent, or a memory of that communication. Storage. And it's sort of like it serves as a brain or a nervous system for people. And there are different levels to the media, one being the collective, the whole thing that everybody interacts with. And then it's also broken down into many subcultures, many separate groups of people that don't necessarily interact with each other. You have media that's dedicated specifically to blacks, media that's dedicated specifically to Jews, media that's dedicated specifically to the Chinese or other nationalities. But what's really lacking is white media. And it's not just because whites are falling down and not doing a good job of having a media. It's because it's actively attacked. It's actively suppressed. And, the White Network is just one little piece of what we have available to us, white people talking about white interests. But even if you consider it all, it's very small compared to, say, the Jewish media, the media that's focused on discussing things from a Jewish point of view. And nobody attacks the Jewish media. Nobody does it and walks away from it unscathed, whereas whites are attacked all the time, legally and verbally. And well, anyway, we do have at least some choice in our media, and especially on the internet. All the other forms of media, we don't really have much of a choice. It's sort of like our political parties. In the United States, we have two major political parties. Neither one represents the interests of white people. Neither one even claims to represent the interests of white people, the best interests of white people. But they both go after Jews, Latinos, blacks. They both actively court those people's votes and make them promises very explicitly. And it's similar in the media. All of the media is friendly to Jews. And to if Jews want to come on and discuss what they think are the best interests of Jews, they're free to do that. And nobody talks about banning them or banning their the outlet that gives them that voice. But the same is not true for whites. There are no pro-white voices in the mainstream media, and especially in the Jews media. But on the internet, we have more freedom. And that's one of the themes that I mentioned in the last installment that came out of this, was the Jewish commentators are a bit frightened by this idea that people are able to communicate on the internet freely without Jewish intermediation, without Jewish control over what can and can't be discussed, and who's doing the discussing. And, you know, they're working on that. They're working on a solution to that. And the solution, basically, the biggest solution, is to categorize certain types of speech as hate speech. You know, what they don't want to hear, what they want to suppress, gets categorized as hate, with quotes around that word, and illegalized. And then they don't really have to run the internet or control it directly. The governments will do the controlling for them. All they really have to do is convince governments to pass these laws against hate and set themselves up as the definers of what hate is, and they're done. The governments will do it from there on with a little bit of prompting and policing. And it's possible. We have choice, and that means we can unplug ourselves from the Jewish media, the mainstream media, and I think that's a good thing. It's necessary. We do. I mean, your attitudes, you'll notice, change pretty dramatically when you stop watching television, when you stop reading Jewish newspapers and getting Jewish opinion poured into your ear. You can read it if you're aware that it's of its Jewish nature with less harm, but it's a big part of the change is to unplug yourself, but it's still unavoidable because even though you may unplug from it, your neighbors and your friends and your family are all still being exposed to it. And you can try and convince them too, and it works to a certain extent that this is poison and you shouldn't be paying attention to it and certainly not paying for it. But it's a hard sell because it's mixed with the candy coating and it's entertaining and people would – they want that entertainment, and the poison comes mixed with it. So the main – there's really no escaping this mainstream media, and there's really two halves to this mainstream Jews media. The left-wing Jews media, the main theme coming out of them in the reaction to this Boston bombing was to – excuse Muslims right off the bat, say we shouldn't think it's Muslims. And I know I'm repeating myself from the last time, but I just want to add some things to this. And the other theme related to it was that we should be thinking of white people instead, blaming white people. And so the overall way to I would describe that is blaming whites and excusing the immigrants, the aliens, the other. And this was the technique that they use is to, you could summarize it as denigrating, pathologizing, and demonizing whites, while at the same time elevating, normalizing, and even lionizing the immigrant, the alien, the other. And the other major theme is white privilege, going on and on about how there's this white privilege that actually, despite what the way I just described it, they actually paint it as the opposite is happening. They see, like Chicken Little and The Sky is Falling, that it's actually whites somehow controlling the media and dominating the media and making the media and the U.S. government favor whites and actually denigrate, pathologize, and demonize the aliens, the immigrants, and the other. And, you know, granted, that's their point of view. And that's one point I'd like to make is basically it depends on your point of view and who you sympathize with. And when I talked about identity, it has to do with who you identify with and identify, you know, who you identify with is determined by who you sympathize with. They go hand in hand with each other. And in this case, it's clear that these voices in the left-wing Jewish media who have such nasty things to say about whites and how they hope whites get profiled and the whites get are the ones doing the bombing, they don't sympathize with whites, and they do sympathize with the Muslims, the aliens, the other, the immigrants. Now, on the right wing, I didn't post very many comments about that and or many links to that. I think it's clear that it's the media as a whole is dominated by the left-wing liberal mindset. But there are a few in the last few years, more mainstream, large, right-wing, you could describe it as right-wing Jews media outlets. I'm thinking of Drudge Report and Breitbart is another big one, probably the two biggest ones. Fox News is another big one. And there are some voices that I found there that were arguing sort of the other side of the coin of this Jews media attitude. And they were basically arguing that whites, it wasn't about whites for them. It was about Muslims. It was about concern about Islamic terrorism. And I mentioned this the last time, that it's really, you know, these two Jewish halves pointing fingers at each other as left and right rather than as Jews and accusing each other of, you know, being hostile to each other, you know, as left and right, some make-believe identity. Or it's not really truly make-believe, but it, you know, it's less real than race. So on the left, from the left-wing point of view, it's the idea is that whites are the problem. And the immigrant, the alien, the other, are just looking for a better life for themselves and their families. You know, they never give whites that kind of credit for what motivates us, but they do afford that to immigrants and aliens and others. And it's because they see the alien as the Jew. They see themselves in the alien's place. In a way, the alien, the other, is a proxy for the Jews. And on the right wing, the argument there, the mindset there seems to be that the whites are not the problem anymore. I mean, they still remember the white enemy, but they don't think whites are the biggest enemy anymore. In their case, they judge the immigrant, the alien, the other as to be more of a threat to the Jews, at least in diaspora, that this is the biggest threat to Jews in America is from, you know, radical Muslims. And mainly they're coming as immigrants. And the nature of this left-wing, right-wing food fight, this theater, this political theater that they put on, is that there's a Jewish code of silence. You know, there's really nobody on the left is calling out the right-wing anti-Islam fervor as Jewish in nature and Jewish in origin, and that it comes from this concern for Jews and diaspora about anti-Semitism. It comes from concern for Israel. And nobody on the right is calling out the left-wing Jewish anti-whiteism, the Jewish nature of that. it's a code of silence on both sides. Now, the white people that are involved as pundits on both sides are scared shitless to say anything about Jews. They're not going to say anything but positive about Jews. And so they just don't even say anything because they don't want to lose their jobs. And the Jews on either side are well aware of the Jews on the other side and that they are Jews and that the nature of this Jewish identity and the anti-white narrative that they have, that they're taught from a very young age about, their, how Europeans are basically their enemies and have victimized them for millennia. They're well aware of that on both sides, but they don't talk about it. And that's part of the dishonesty about that this event has brought out. And there's lots of events like this. Every year there's two or three of these media feeding frenzies in reaction to some event that brings out these kind of things. And this is kind of my specialty. This is what I have focused on for the last few years, is paying attention to what the media is saying. And I've seen it before with Sarah Palin a couple of years ago used the term blood libel, and the Jews and the media went berserk. You're not allowed to use that term because it has special meaning to Jews, just to cite one example. So on the left wing, the prominent source there I saw was Salon, and I focused a lot on Salon because it seemed like a very concentrated source, the seminal source, really, of the pro-Muslim and even more so the anti-white rhetoric was coming out of Salon. And David Sirota was the source of a lot of that, and he cited Tim Wise, who is basically a professional anti-white. But along with Sirota was Joan Walsh, and Joan Walsh came to Sirota's defense twice. And I don't think I mentioned her the last time because she hadn't yet come to his defense. But Joan Walsh is, I would also describe her as professional anti-white, that she's written a book, What's the Problem with White People, or What's Wrong with White People, something like that, that was released in the past year. And she wrote an article for Salon a couple of months ago. I didn't comment on it, but I noticed it said something like the title was How to Talk to White People. And it was talking about our impending reduction to basically becoming a minority in America. And that she argued like as if she was the voice of reason there, that we need to be sensitive to white concerns about this. But she's not really friendly to whites. And one of the things that came out of this Jews media feeding frenzy in the wake of the bombing was the fact that there really aren't any pro-white voices in the media. There was all of this talk about hoping it was Sirota kicked it off by hoping it was white people. The flip side of you shouldn't jump to the conclusion that it's Muslims. And Sirota went as far as to say, hope that it's white people instead. And there was nobody really to respond to that. You got the right-wing mainstream media, which is just as Jewish as the left-wing. And there was no response there that said, hey, that's anti-white. And what is especially odd about that is the fact that there are so many Jews on the right wing who could have said, hey, what you're saying about whites, can't you imagine somebody saying that about Jews and how you would react, how I would react as a Jew to somebody saying that? And nobody pointed out that, hey, Jews are white, like they normally do, and pretend that Jews are white, and said, as a white person, I object to that. Nobody said any such thing that I could find. I'd like to hear about it if they did. But the two representatives there on that side that I'll talk about are Mona Charon and Charles Jacobs. These are two right-wing Jews, right-wing in quotes, because they're presented on right-wing, supposedly right-wing outlets, but I don't think either of them is really right-wing in any sense, except that their rhetoric is doesn't fit in the left wing. So let me talk about them more specifically, these people. Sirota, and this is where the program post will come in handy for me, because I don't really want to read long sections here, but I will quote these articles that I'm going to talk about. Let me talk about Joan Walsh's defense of Sirota. She actually wrote an article titled, "Are the Sarnaev brothers white?" And she wrote, "Our confusion about whether the Sarnaevs are white and the right wing's determination to say they aren't." Now, she didn't cite anybody saying that they weren't. What she's arguing here is basically that the right wing wants to insist that they're not white. Well, you know, there are people I've seen saying they aren't Americans. They're Muslims. They're aliens. They're immigrants. They're not us. You know, it goes back to this realization of what identity is. What does it mean? And what Joan Walsh says in this article is really, she basically wants to deny white people the ability to be able to distinguish ourselves from other people. And the interesting thing about this is there isn't anybody arguing on the other side. There's not in the mainstream anyway, nobody that has a voice, and Salon certainly doesn't give anybody a voice to answer her back. She faults the supposed people on the right wing who are determined to make them not white for being racist, basically, and she implies that that they're racist and that this is just evidence that Sirota's point about white privilege, citing Tim Wise, is correct. You know, because basically in their minds, everything proves that white privilege exists and is real, no matter what happens. They hope that it's white people because white privilege. It turns out it's not whites. It's actually alien Muslims from Chechnya. It's not white Americans anyway, not white Christians like Wise and Sirota had hoped. And yet still, somehow, they figure out a way to blame white people. In this case, Walsh is blaming white people for somehow arguing, even implicitly, that these guys aren't white Americans. So we're damned if we do, and we're damned if we don't, basically, in her logic. She appeared on television then on a segment where somebody actually did challenge her. But from a neutral point of view, this woman named S.E. Cupp, the article I'll cite here, describes it as taking her to task. But I don't really see it as taking her to task. She really just put it in a neutral way as, you know, why are you trying to blame white people and conservatives in the wake of the attack? And Walsh replied that the incidence of prejudice and discrimination would be reduced if the bombers had turned out to be white. Now, I made the point in my blog that if that was true, if Sirota's and Tim Wise and Joan Walsh just simply wanted discrimination and prejudice to be reduced, well, they would be hoping that it was Jews that were responsible for the bombing, because then the media wouldn't pay any attention to it at all and wouldn't allow anybody to say anything negative about Jews in their media. They don't, as it is. But if that's who it turned out to be for the bombing, who did the bombing, there wouldn't be any nasty things said about Jews as a whole. And so, you know, that's the false thing about it. Nobody even did that thought experiment. Nobody even expressed that out loud. It's related to, you know, nobody said, what if you substitute Jew for white in what Sirota is saying? How does that fly amongst Jews? And, you know, why shouldn't white people be upset about what he had to say and what Joan Walsh has to say? And, you know, the bottom line is that Joan Walsh claims that race is entirely a political and social construct. And there's some truth to it, that identity is in part political and social construct. Not entirely. She just wants to deny that there's any biological component to it at all. But this idea of white privilege that keeps coming from these left-wing Jews is entirely a Jewish construct. They're the ones creating this idea, and it's an inversion of reality. It's really an indication of just how powerful they are and how powerful repetition, how powerful propaganda can be, and the repetition from enough megaphones for a long enough time can make their social construct true. Sirota actually wrote a piece titled, "Americans Should Expect Acts of Terror." And his point in that was that With America having killed thousands of civilians in its wars, we should be appalled by acts of terrorism, but we shouldn't be surprised by them. We should know that violence will inevitably come from those like the Boston bombing suspect who, according to a Washington, you know, my thought when I see this we stuff and America is this is nonsense. We who? America who? And that's another one of these patterns that's come out of this attack is this dishonest rhetoric about America as this collective when it's coming from these people who know very well that it's fractured, that it's multiculturalism, it's our greatest strength is our diversity. And they know, they argue in favor of that. But then when it strikes their fancy, when it serves their interest, then they argue about America as if it's this big collective that's collectively responsible for these bombings that were done for the defense of Israel's best interest. You know, if you want to talk about the Muslims being pissed off, it's because our country bombs them for Israel's interests. And Jews on the right wing are responsible in large part for that. But you'll never see a left-wing Jew in the mainstream actually identify the Jewish component of that bombing, about who called for the bombing and who thinks it's a good idea, who justified it, who's writing the articles right now calling for war against Iran to prevent another Holocaust in Israel. It's Jews writing those articles and people who have the best interests of Jews in mind, even if they're not Jews themselves. It's these neocon right-wingers. And that's what defines a neocon. He talks about blowback. And that's the key here is, this is in Sirota's article, is that this idea of blowback is forbidden, that people aren't allowed to talk about it and don't talk about it because then they're accused of anti-Americanism and they're silenced. I don't see anybody silencing Sirota and or any of the other people who have talked about blowback. It's a well-known concept. Many people understand what it means. Consequences of an action, especially when it comes to political machinations. What he doesn't do, and what none of these people who talk about this stuff do, is talk about blowback from whites being justified or expected. And, you know, this attitude in the media has been basically to, in the wake of discovering that these guys are Chechen Muslims, is to poo-poo it, minimize it, and excuse it, and play it down. Whereas if it really had turned out to be whites, they would have been playing up the fact that they were whites. They would have been talking about them as these nasty, extremist racists for no reason whatsoever did this and no good reason. And anybody who tried to examine their motives and excuse them would be kicked out of the media for trying to do that. So these are the some of the double standards and double talk that we see coming out of the Jewish media in the wake of the bombing. I have more to say, and I think I'll have to do a part two to say it. So please join me then.